One, two, three, four.
It was 40 years ago tomorrow that a quartet from England landed in America for a concert and television appearances. They would change popular music forever. The Beatles, John, Paul, George, and Ringo, helped define the youth culture with their clothes, their attitudes, and most of all, their music. 3-minute songs combining American rock and R&B with pop tunes. Although his new book is called The Beatles Come to America, Martin Goldsmith says an important part of the story took place years earlier. The Beatles were hired to play in a club in one of the seedier districts of Hamburg, Germany.
They played under the most grueling circumstances. They had 12-hour shifts. They played for an hour, they were off for an hour. They played for an hour, they were off for an hour. And they had to expand their musical horizons. They couldn't just learn a handful of songs. They needed to learn enough songs to keep the audience satisfied in these dives where they were playing along the red light Reeperbahn. And they performed at such a degree of white-hot intensity that even they weren't aware what had happened.
The constant performing paid off in a polished sound that led to rising popularity in Britain. With Beatlemania in full flower, the group left for America. They arrived as the country was mourning the assassination, just 3 months earlier, of President John Kennedy. Goldsmith says the group provided a much-needed release.
The country was still trying to come to terms with the loss of this young, vibrant, witty president. And suddenly appearing at Kennedy Airport in New York were these vibrant, witty, artistic young men from England, and they really dispelled the lingering gloom from November with their magnificent music.
They were such a smash here, and yet there had been earlier attempts to market the Beatles mm-hmm. in the United States, and they had failed.
Well, Capitol Records had no interest in marketing the Beatles. They kept saying to Brian Epstein, the Beatles manager, and George Martin, the Beatles producer, well, we know the American audience better than you do, and this song, Please Please Me, which is maybe number one in England, will never fly over here. And the song, She Loves You, it'll never work in America. And they were actually originally had the same response to I Want to Hold Your Hand, but in November of 1963, just days before the Kennedy assassination, Brian Epstein came to the United States and met with the president of Capitol Records, sort of went over the head of the A&R man, and with a certain amount of clever twisting of the truth, said, yes, well, we produced I Want to Hold Your Hand with the American market specifically in mind. And they managed to get the president of Capitol Records to agree to release I Want to Hold Your Hand in America.
And when I touch you, I feel happy inside. It's such a feeling that my love, I can hide. Yeah.
The Beatles immediately became a huge social phenomenon, at least with the public. Critics were more concerned with their appearance.
They were constantly referred to as shaggy sheepdogs, and the Miami Herald referred to them as wailing weirdies. And it seems, in retrospect, just fascinating that the American media were unable to discern the magnificence of the music of the Beatles and concentrated on the externals.
The mop tops.
Exactly.
The Beatles were booked for concerts in Washington, D.C., at Carnegie Hall in New York, and for 3 appearances on The Ed Sullivan Show, then the most popular variety program on television. Goldsmith says Sullivan was the consummate showman and was well aware of the sensation the Beatles were becoming. Sullivan planned their performances accordingly.
Now, yesterday and today, our theater's been jammed with newspapermen and hundreds of photographers from all over the nation, and these veterans agree with me that the city never has witnessed the excitement stirred by these youngsters from Liverpool who call themselves the Beatles. Now, tonight, you're going to twice be entertained by them. Right now, and again in the second half of our show. Ladies and gentlemen, The Beatles!
The Beatles were on first, but Ed Sullivan very craftily came out, announced that the Beatles were here, and then went to an AeroShave commercial. And then the Beatles returned, and there is such a palpable joy in the audience. And on stage, the Beatles had a wonderful time, and there's this great moment when John and George look at each other, and their faces just light up in this most glorious smile. They know they're going over big.
Close your eyes, and I'll kiss you.
Years later, Goldsmith traveled to the Beatles' hometown of Liverpool to see the places that inspired the songs Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields Forever. Those tunes, and many others, would become smash hits long after the group's first visit to America. Goldsmith says there's no doubt the popularity of the Beatles has endured and grown.
I had this extraordinary experience sitting in the churchyard there where John and Paul met, and all of these 5- and 6- and 7-year-old kids from Bishop Martin Primary School filed into the church. And a few minutes later, they began to sing Octopus's Garden and Eleanor Rigby and When I'm 64. And I had this most extraordinary sense that, Bob, you and I don't own this music anymore. It is passing on to the ages, as all great music does.
Martin Goldsmith is the former host of NPR's Performance Today. His new book is The Beatles Come to America. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Paul Bedwards. When I'm